but kind of got wound up in my comments in the room next door and went over my time allotment, but I'm glad to be with you. My message today has been, it's an exciting time to be in agriculture. We have record prices, we have record farm income, we have record exports, record opportunities, and as we see the blending of energy and agriculture come together, we are looking at a great future for the agriculture community. We're in the midst of the Farm Bill, as you are aware. Strong negotiations are taking place as we speak between the administration and the trying to reconcile the differences between the House and the Senate. And I am optimistic that we will move forward and see a farm bill that is agreed upon by both houses and that is acceptable to the administration and the president would be proud to sign. As you are aware, we also are in the midst of the largest beef recall in the history of the United States. USDA is working hard in that effort to provide the arena in which we show the people of the United States that for their school kids, the rules matter. For the moms out there, that the school lunches and the food they have at home is safe. And for our trading partners, that we are going to provide food in a safe manner for our markets here in the United States and our domestic, in our international markets as well. That's kind of the broad stroke about what's going on today, and I'd be glad to answer any questions that you might have. Yeah. In the broad example, I can tell you the reason Senator Harkin says that we haven't provided funding sources, he's saying we haven't provided funding sources that are acceptable to him. that's the real issue. The administration has put many non-tax increases on the table. And if you want to find some specifics, all you have to do is look at the president's budget, which includes many areas of billions and billions of dollars in there of funding sources that could be used for this program. The administration is committed to seeing a new farm bill without tax increases. And while we have put funding sources on the table, the Senate continues to put funding sources on the table, and the House continues to put funding sources on the table. We haven't arrived at a mix that's been acceptable all the way around yet. So, Senator Harkin is correct when he says we haven't been forthcoming with funding sources. He forgets the caveat, the ones that he likes. everything you put on the table, somebody has a concern about. So our effort is to provide a big enough bucket of funding sources to cover the increased expenditures over baseline so that we can prioritize the best ones out there and get an acceptable funding source that's going to pay for the expenses in this bill. Yes?
Mr. Secretary, Jeff Allen from Cromwell Agri Network in Illinois. Spades and spades and dollars and cents. When the president has signed $152 billion economic stimulus package, the checks start going out in May. I don't want to pull up Mr. Harkin's pencil of that statement from a few years ago, but $10 billion for a farm bill over baseline versus $152 that's unfunded. It seems that agriculture will be able to carry its weight, especially given two-thirds of that going to nutrition.
And your question is?
The question is, if you go $152 billion not funded for the base of consumers, Can we not go $10 billion over for a farm bill that will support rural America, renewable energy, and all the other things that have been mentioned over the day?
The thing that I remember in that debate is that Congress is the one that sets the limits on paygo rules, not the administration. The administration has put an increased funding on the table, which focuses on more funding for nutrition, conservation, specialty crops, and energy beyond the movement of increased direct payments, et cetera. We have $6 billion on the table. The issue isn't one that's generated by the administration here. The administration, the pay goal rules or the forward rules, is Congress's limitation. They're the ones that are putting this on the table. Thank you. Yes? The USDA supports a $6 billion level, which the House has generated a framework of what a farm bill would look like. We understand that we're likely to see an increase in there as the Senate looks at their needs and priorities and listens to their constituents about what needs to be done in this bill. But the administration, myself personally, and USDA is not willing to look at increased spending if it isn't generated by reform. We can't have increased spending without reforms. This is not going to happen in this bill. So what we need to understand is how the reforms will generate the payments as we go forward.
Do you have an example
specifically
you can share with us?
I'd rather not, just because we're in the midst of negotiations. I said everything you put on the table, somebody has an objection to. We're just trying to manage the conversation so that we can narrow the differences and get something that causes the least pain, I suppose, in the end. Yes?
Secretary Urban Leiter from DTN. You mentioned in your remarks to the general session the role that the renewable fuel standard has played in helping to boost crop prices this year. There's been a lot of pressure in recent weeks from opponents of renewable fuels on issues like the environment and food costs. And even some talk about the various safety valves within the new energy bill being used this year to remove the mandate for a year. Do you see any possibility that that will happen, that the mandate will be waived this year?
I don't. And I don't because no matter what happens, it's not going to have an effect this year. We are probably getting to the point of topping out on ethanol production, not because of production capacity, but because of our ability to deliver it to the current infrastructure. As you know, it takes, we can't run the ethanol through the normal pipelines and things. It takes tank cars to move it. We're starting to be restricted on that infrastructure. So, we're getting to the point where, we're going to see the limitations of that generated this year. The research dollars are going in. We're moving from ethanol to cellulosic generation. It's going to take us some time to get there, but our chief economist at USDA is predicting that we'll see a leveling off and gradual taper of the commodity prices over the next several years, and that while we are playing catch-up on non-price-distorting feedstocks for ethanol, which are going to take some time, we do think that we are arriving at the levels this year where we're just going to see a leveling off of those prices. Yes?
We've heard some calls from some growers that they would like to see some export containment on wheat. The administration has any policy in regard to that?
The administration has a policy saying we're not going to limit exports because of market conditions. Yes?
Secretary Porter, earlier tonight that you and the deputy had a meeting with Senator Chambliss, Cochran, and Lincoln, primarily focused on payment limits. Is there any narrowing of the differences between the administration and these southern senators in this area?
Can't you do anything without it being in the news? We did have a good meeting, and the effort, I believe, was very productive because it helped us understand the two elements of that issue. One element is the legitimate operator who, because of a high-value crop or off-farm businesses or things that get incorporated in the money, in the dollars, or in the limit, really has a legitimate concern about how this price cap and price limits on the subsidies would affect the operating of their business. The other element are the people out there that are getting the subsidies that clearly don't deserve them, don't need them, and shouldn't have them. And we do all have an effort to say the taxpayers' money should be spent as wisely as possible, and people shouldn't get checks that don't need them. And that particular meeting helped us kind of frame that issue as to, you know, there are two elements here. There's a legitimate element of concern, and there's the element of people who are saying, I get it, but I really shouldn't have it. So it was helpful. And as it boils down to, as always, is not the number, but what are the elements that go into arriving at the number? And I think we made some good progress yesterday in understanding that.
Can I follow that up?
Let's get... Well, that was the going out of the room discussion is, you know, how can we generate language and public policy direction to, you know, to codify that? At this point in time, we don't know, but I think we understood the issue in the room, you know, how you can put it on paper and make it legally binding. We don't know how to do that yet. Yes?
Randy Boone, River Farm Network.
Yes.
As a farmer, though, that payment typically follows the landowner. It's probably more of a comment than a question, because when I was farming, if I didn't share that payment with the landowner as I was renting the land, he just raised my rent.
Exactly.
And then he got it. So I guess that's the dilemma. I guess how do you guarantee that it stays with the producer?
It's a big dilemma, because today with the capital cost of farming. To be able to generate some of that capital through a third party who owns the land, leases it back to you through crop share or cash rent, whatever it might be, is a big deal. And what we talked about yesterday was, how do you assign the risk element? Who's taking the risk here? Certainly in a crop sharing situation, both parties are taking a risk. But where's across the line in a cash rent situation? Where's across the line in, you know, some kind of a combined ownership situation? You know, all those need to be sorted out. But really, it is a risk element, I believe. And if we can focus on who's taking the risk in a farming operation and who gets the advantages of a profitable organization, that's what we need to be involved in with the Farm Bill. Yes? You know, it's been kind of involved in the overall general discussions of reform. I have not been in meetings where we have specifically said, you know, we've got to deal with this revenue piece. But it is an important element of what was put on the table by the administration in January of 2007, which was a revenue-based program versus an imagined one. So I think the effort was presented. It's on the table. The administration feels strongly that revenue-based programs should be a part of the Farm Bill, and we're not changing that stance. We haven't, you know, specifically been negotiating anything there other than it is part of the reforms. Yes?
I wanted to talk about the beef recall. Ron Hayes, Great Radio Oklahoma Network. We're hearing kind of from both sides. AMI is talking about this was just a random isolated incident. You've got the Humane Society seemingly suggesting that it may be very, very much more than just this random, actual outcome. You know, from what you've seen thus far, are you thinking that it is just one of a kind, or do you think that this might be more prevalent?
Well, I think, the first point I'd like to make is with a Class 2 recall, this is not an issue of food safety. Food safety is good. I mean, our foodstuffs out there are good, and the people of the United States can be assured that the product on their shelves and in their freezers is fine. As we look into the inhumane treatment of animals, we don't know exactly if this was an isolated incident or it wasn't. We are assuming at this point in time that it is not. That it is an isolated instance, that it's not a broader range in other facilities. I'd like to point out that our inspectors are there every day. As a matter of fact, the plant can't operate unless our inspectors are on the job. This is an issue of violating the rules. And as rules were put in place for downer cows, we feel at USDA they are very important, and that people must abide by them if we're going to have the credibility in the marketplace to provide an abundant and safe food supply. So what happens now is we're in an investigation. And I requested the Office of General Counsel in our office the Office of Inspector General in our office to pursue this. They're doing the investigation. If we find out, and they're doing an audit in other plants, by the way. So if we find out that this is not an isolated incident, we're going to, react strongly. I think the message is clear out there that rules matter, and that our facilities out there that are licensed by the USDA must perform by the rules. And importantly, we need to understand through this investigation why and how it happened. If there were incentives here for people to make sure the number of cows went through, if there was a culture in the company that said, let's get these cows up and let's get them in because that's more important than humanely treating them, we need to know that because we want to make sure it's not replicated in other facilities. I can't tell you that it is totally an isolated incident. What I can tell you is not going to happen again.
And what you've been able to say is was it an authentic incident? Based on the fact that you're going on video from Humane Society?
It is an authentic incident. Now, certainly the video that was provided by the Humane Society included animals that were being mistreated that did not go into the food supply. As you know, a veterinarian employed by the USDA clears every animal to go into the food supply. They are cleared through visual observation of at-rest and ambulatory cattle. Once they are identified as being appropriate to go into the food supply, they are tagged, and you're able to follow every animal through. What happened here is, after that process, we've been able to track an animal that went down. And when that happens, the rules are you have to call a veterinarian to say, it's approved to go through or it's not. We were able to track one that went down and this veterinarian was not called and went into the meat supply. Now, we know that because of the feed ban, because of the specially regulated material removal, because of other inspections in the plant, that doesn't cause us a problem in food safety, but it causes a problem in following the rules, and that's why we took the action we did for a Class 2 recall. Yes, go ahead.
There's a lot of concern here among soybean corn farmers. They enjoy the high prices, but they say, what if we have a drought? What if we have a disease problem? The high prices we see now could simply explode to the upside. A lot feel that we need to open up some CRP land to bring some more acres into production this year. Your thoughts on that? Are you willing to accept that? And if not, what happens if we have a problem and we see $20 beans and $7 corn this summer?
Well, I had a good conversation with the research aspects of that with the board of directors this morning at breakfast. The efforts of USDA to provide the research arena to look for diseases and issues there and how we can, provide that good growing arena is important. As far as releasing CRP from property, we have made the decision at USDA that we will not release acreage without penalty for the 2008 growing season. For the 2009 season, we're looking at all the factors that are there. We have to make the decision later on in the year to get ready for the growing patterns for the 2009 crop. But at this point in time, we've said no for 2008. And for 2009, we're gonna look at all the elements, look at the factors that are on the table and make a decision when that time comes.
Can we take two more questions?
Yes. Well, I think the fallout from the meat recall to our trading partners, I believe, is a positive one. I believe that As our trading partners and other nations and citizens in other countries look at us, they can understand that we're going to follow the rules, that we have regulations in place that are important to the industry, and that both for our consumers here in the United States and our consumers in international markets, we're going to provide good, clean, safe food. I think that's a strong message, and it's a good handle for us in negotiations. As far as the Korean president coming, I'm excited for him to come to the United States because I heard in his campaign him talking about the support of the free trade agreement between Korea and the United States. I think from what I read and heard of what he said in his campaign, he's a supporter of it. He's going to meet with the president who's a supporter of it. And, you know, hopefully that will lead to the effort of seeing a free trade agreement signed between Korea and the United States. Yeah. Well, you didn't get one back there. Well, we'll do two more. Go ahead. I've been extremely impressed with FSIS as they have dealt with this issue. The manufacturer of this product was forthcoming, identified it themselves, brought it to our attention. That's a good way to work. And the fact that it was identified, contained, and the process put forward to withdraw the seed from the market to take care of it, I think, has caused not a lack of concern, but it's caused an understanding with our trading partners that this isn't something that's going to affect their imports. It's not going to be something that affects their future growth patterns, and it's not going to be something that affects the seed quality in the United States. So I think, you know, it was not a good situation. I think it was handled extremely well from the USDA standpoint, and while you know, everybody looks at it with concern, I think there's an understanding out there that this really is an effort that is not going to affect the future production of corn, you know, through that Event 32. Yeah, you had one back there.
On the recall, are you worried that the Humane Society staff had the video and the administration did not?
I am appreciative of the Humane Society bringing forth this video because obviously this was happening under our watch and we didn't know about it. That's an important partnership, I think, of entities that have a common mission, which is the humane treatment of animals. I would point out that 12 times last year we suspended facilities in the United States because of inhumane treatment of animals. Not this particular one, but other facilities. 400 times in the Hallmark Westland facility, our veterinarian was called to look at a downer animal last year to say whether it's appropriate to go into the food supply or it wasn't. I believe that the regulations are in place and our inspectors are on the site that can oversee this issue. We had a problem. We didn't see it here at this facility. The Humane Society brought it to our attention. We took strong, swift action. I don't think there's anybody on God's green earth in the slaughterhouse business that would understand today that we are, you know, we're going to follow the rules. And if they put meat that's not supposed to go into supply, they're going to get it back. And so I'm convinced that while we had a problem in the past, I don't expect it to happen in the future. And we are making some adjustments in inspection. We're changing around some of the ways that we observe these situations. But you know, the Humane Society, I don't always agree with their methods, their direction, nor do I agree with the way they handled this issue. But they did bring it to our attention, and for that, we have a better system out there. Thank you all. Appreciate it.